Kaya Biz with Gule Tumfupi on Kaya 959. Legally speaking on Kaya Biz.
Yep, this is where we talk all things legalese, right? And sometimes it might be difficult for others to comprehend. Sometimes we just get lost in it because in the world of entrepreneurship, one is required to wear many hats, from being the accountant, the founder of the company. Maybe you purchased the company, but there's a lot of legal elements that one does need to be cognizant of. Just over a week ago, we discussed the various types of legal entities that one can consider, primarily because we now live in a world where individuals are looking at starting new entities, but not quite clear on which ones might suit them best. And we've also received a lot more clarity in terms of the change in the landscape regarding some key themes that you need to be mindful of. Because if you are in a business and you transact, that is a contract, whether it is tacit or it is actually documented, is what we highlighted as well last week. Well, today we expand on this further by really getting clarity on some of the statutory requirements of businesses, right? And this really speaks to compliance. Some might consider it a headache, but trust me, once you get this right, it just makes so many other aspects of your business that much easier. To help us unpack this particular theme, we're joined by our guest this evening, Francois Treblanche. He's an attorney and he is the director at Treblanche Khumalo Commercial Lawyers. Francois, great to touch base with you again, and thank you so much for making time.
Good evening, Guguletu. No, absolutely my pleasure. Nice to be back, and good evening to our listeners.
Indeed. As promised, I'm going to take more notes, and hopefully this will substantiate my application to be an intern at your company. Oh, fantastic. Well, we're also keen to take calls from our listeners this evening, 086-000-959. And that's if you have a few elements or questions that you'd like to raise. Naturally, we can only respond to them from a generic point of view. Anything that might be rather specialized and specific to your operations, we would suggest that you do reach out to Treblanche Khumalo Commercial Lawyers, and they'll be able to assist you if you do consult with them. But Francois, you think first things first, right? When it comes to compliance, many of us think headache because it just seems overwhelming. It seems as though it's a burden. And some of us actually just don't even understand what it is that we need to comply with. But I guess give us a quick overview of the importance of compliance and the far-reaching effects it has on one's business operations.
I think you've summarized it extremely well. It is fine. There's no question about it. But it's just like we discussed. It's
not fine. Francois, I'm going to ask you to pause it there very briefly. It does seem as though we have a few gremlins in the system. The network is a bit on and off, so perhaps if you could stay positioned in one particular spot and the network might be better there, unless we do try to give you a ring again. But that is our guest this evening, Francois Treblanche. He is an attorney at Treblanche Khumalo Commercial Lawyers, helping us unpack compliance for businesses. And we'll talk through a few themes that one does need to make sure that you comply with, from the statutory requirements, registering your business with CIPC. SARS, of course, is a huge one. And if you do have staff members, making sure that you also take into account some of the elements that you need to comply with the regulator, or rather the revenue service. I'm hoping we've got Francois back on the line and that the gremlins have gone away. And help us out here. How do you boost your network at home? Well, we've got Francois back, and we're going to continue with the conversation. Francois, I'm glad that you can hear us loud and clear. Can you?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Guguletu. Can you hear me well?
Loud and clear. The line is crisp. Thank you so much for assisting us there. You were on the part about essentially saying compliance is a bit of a headache, but it still remains important.
Well, the bad news is compliance is not something that is going to make your business more profitable. So it doesn't really come into the business model. It doesn't come into the income statement. It doesn't come into the profit and loss account. However, if one doesn't meet the compliance requirements, then you are potentially jeopardizing your business because you are potentially facing administrative fines and that type of thing. So it doesn't add value, but it can detract value if you don't comply. And I think the great news is that compliance is normally a once-off type of exercise. Mm-hmm. Compliance for most entrepreneurs is not an ongoing, frequent, periodic exercise. A lot of compliance requirements are really just to register with a particular regulator. And once that is done, that's once-off. That's box ticked. There's no need to constantly report to the regulator or anything like that. So I think that's the general setting. I think the other important point is that if one looks at a country like the People's Republic of China, every single business has to register with a particular ministry and must have a business license. Okay. Now, South Africa doesn't have that at all. South Africa, it depends very much on what type of business vehicle one is using, and it depends very much on what type of business one is actually conducting. Those two elements drive compliance as far as legal registrations are concerned.
I guess, simply put, does that mean that we might have it slightly easier than in South Africa?
Well, not, because they've got that on top of everything else. So you cannot conduct business in the People's Republic of China unless you are registered with that particular ministry. But on top of that, they've got similar compliance requirements to what we have, depending on which industry you are in. So it's not a sort of one shop fits all and it's all done. Mm-hmm. It's one on top of everything else.
Exactly. And I guess that would also speak similarly then to the kind of business structures or business entities that can be registered in South Africa, from a sole proprietorship to a private company, NGO and the likes.
Oh, absolutely. Spot on. I think as a rule of thumb, there are two registrations which just about every business has to make in South Africa. The one is with our friend SARS, if you're conducting a business.
I like how you call them our friend, right? We usually like them when they give us refunds, not when we make
refunds. then they are my best friend. Eh?
Indeed.
So if one is conducting business, it doesn't really matter what business vehicle one is using. Registration with SARS is inevitably going to come into play there. Mm-hmm. And I think what's important here is to distinguish a couple of registrations there. So depending on the business entity vehicle, one would register that particular vehicle either as a company or as a CC or as a partnership or as a trust mm-hmm. or as a sole proprietor as a taxpayer with SARS. And then we've got to look at a couple of things that come out of that. If one employs anyone in that business, then we have to deduct, as the business owners, pay as you earn from our employees' salaries on behalf of SARS and pay that over to SARS.
Yes.
We also have to deduct unemployment insurance fund contributions on behalf of our employees and pay that over to SARS, and SARS then on forwards that to the fund. So the minute one's got employees, one's got to look at pay-as-you-earn deductions on top of the normal tax that you would pay as a business owner. And then the other one to just be mindful of is obviously value-added tax.
Yes.
If one starts generating, I can't remember exactly the threshold, but I think it's about R1 million of revenue for every 12 months, it becomes compulsory to register for VAT. Now, the good news about VAT is it's completely neutral. The business collects the VAT on behalf of SARS and should then pay over the VAT to SARS. Mm-hmm. So that's the one big one. The other big one is the Protection of Personal Information Act, which has recently come into law. Now, there's been quite a lot of hype about it in the media.
I saw that.
In simple English, that act applies to any business that, quote, processes, unquote, personal information. Now, it sounds as if, what's that? But processes is so widely defined in the Act. It's basically if one receives any personal information, if one stores any personal information, if one disseminates any personal information. And personal information is also very broadly defined. Mm. It includes very simple things like one's name, one's address, one's gender. It's difficult to think of most businesses who are not going to receive something like that from their clients. If you're just selling over the counter,
exactly.
Yes, it probably won't happen. But for most of us who interact with established clients, we're definitely going to get to that. And I think what's important for the listeners is just if you are in that position where you're receiving personal information about anyone, you do have to register with the relevant regulator under POPIA. But that's the good news. Then it's done. It's once off.
Just
register and you're done.
Makes sense. Because you are quite right. We did see quite a splur of emails and texts from various companies earlier on this year. If I'm not mistaken, I think between the month of June and July, essentially seeking our confirmation to say, hold on, we've got your personal information. We do mention that we will comply in this particular manner. Do you agree that we keep your information or do you prefer to unsubscribe? So you're quite right. We saw quite a rally in terms of companies seeking to comply with many of these laws. And I guess that's an an interesting part, right? Because regardless of whether you're an SMME or a large conglomerate and corporate in South Africa, the law is the law, and one is still forced to comply. Do we find that there might be certain exclusions, though, depending on the size of an entity, primarily when it comes to information, tax I'm aware of, but are there any other exclusions that might be applicable in that kind of environment?
I'm not on Popia, unfortunately. Uh-huh. It applies across the board. Whether one's annual turnover is 1 cent or 1 billion rand, it applies. Size and profitability does not come into play at all. I think where size does come into play is where the business must take reasonable measures to ensure certain protections of the personal information that it has in its possession. Now, obviously, if one is Standard Bank or Absa or Nedbank, the resources available to take reasonable measures would differ dramatically from Francois de Blanche, sole trader, wearing all the hats. So I think it comes into play as to what is reasonable as far as complying with the Act is concerned, mm-hmm. but not as far as being exempt from the Act is concerned now.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, if you've just joined us in this conversation, we are speaking to Francois Terblanche. He is the director of Terblanche Khumalo Commercial Law Specialist, helping us understand the various legal aspects of starting a new business and the statutory requirements that one would need to comply with, right, to make sure that you tick all the boxes from the CIPC to the Revenue Service and, of course, even from a legal point of view with Popia, making sure that you do register. Francois, I'm hoping that we can talk a bit about people. And you mentioned tax earlier, specifically related to the salaries that you would pay out to your staff. But what about the Department of Labor? Are there certain terms and conditions that would apply here, especially when it comes to compensation and occupational injuries that might take place in the workplace?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. There are no, as far as I'm aware, and I'm certainly no labor law specialist, but I'm not aware of any compulsory deductions that one needs to make from one's employees' salaries as far as the occupational, any sort of occupational injury is concerned. How that fund is funded, I am not 100% certain, mm-hmm. but to the best of my knowledge, the only compulsory deductions one has to make from one's staff's employee, salaries, would be pay as you earn, which is pay to source, and then also contributions towards the unemployment insurance fund. But I'm not aware of any other mandatory deductions that would go towards a fund that basically compensates one if one is injured whilst mm-hmm. in the workplace. But Google, if I can just go back to one of your points.
Sure.
You mentioned the various business entities or business forms. And I think it may be worth us just running through that very quickly as far as registrations are concerned.
Yes.
Because I think that would help a lot of people. So if you are Francois Terblanche sole trader, sole proprietor, you don't need to register as a sole proprietor with a regulator of sole proprietors. There is no such regulator. Mm-hmm. You must obviously register with SARS, but there's no one who regulates sole proprietors just because they're sole proprietors.
And I guess it makes sense, right? Because a refresher on what sole proprietors are, it's Google working independently. Google is the business, and unless I actually show up to be a plumber, to speak at an event, or drive an e-hailing taxi, then the job won't get done, right?
Absolutely. And exactly the same is true as if you and I were to go into a business partnership and we were to conduct business as a partnership. There is no regulator that specifically oversees partnerships just because they're partnerships. They're very much the same notion that applies. However, if we are trading as a company or as a close corporation, then we are very much subject to the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission's jurisdiction. When we created the CC or when we created the company, it had to be done there, so they will know about it. Uh-huh. And every year, we've got to file a return with it. So the annual return, which is completely different from the tax return, that one has to file with the CIPC. And if one doesn't, and this is where the value detraction part comes in, then the CIPC can put you into deregistration, which basically means your company ceases to exist. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a hectic outcome. And people just forget sometimes to file the annual returns, and it's not like writing a check. It's really not a big issue, mm-hmm. but people forget about it, and then the consequences can be severe. And then just moving on to the last one, if we were to use a business trust as our business vehicle, then we would be squarely within the jurisdiction of the master of the High Court. So we would need to file the trust deed with the master, and we would also, and this is very important, we would also need to get a document from the master which is called letters of authority. Mm-hmm. And letters of authority are basically the master confirming who the trustees of the business trust are. Uh-huh. And only those people can validly act as trustees. Unless one has that little piece of paper in your hand and your name is on that paper, you cannot manage that trust.
That sounds like it's a little bit more complex, right? Because you need to make sure that these people exist, they're alive, they are of a sound mind, they're aware of their duties and responsibilities as trustees and are willing and able to execute those duties, right? Is this a good way then, I guess, not only of making sure that sound individuals become appointed as trustees, but also to minimize any kind of fraud or corrupt activity that could take place in that kind of environment?
Sadly not. The fact that somebody, that the master has issued a letter of authority in respect particular person is no guarantee of quality or of probity or of honesty. Basically, if there is a massive black mark against that person's name already and the master picks that up, he or she may, in extreme circumstances, not issue a letter of authority. But for the rest, there really is no quality assurance embedded in the master issuing the piece of paper. It's literally just, okay, this looks in order, I'm going to issue it. So it doesn't come with any quality assurance at all.
So should we then be concerned as individuals who might have business trusts, or that's when we need to book an appointment with Tor Blanche Khumalo, commercial law specialist, right?
Well, you know, the big thing on business trusts, Guguletso, is that in order for that trust to stand up in law, the person who created the trust must relinquish control of that trust. Uh-huh. If the person who created the trust, which is called the founder of the trust, basically retains control of the trust after it had been created, then the law will not recognize the trust as being separate from that person, which is a disaster. So basically what needs to happen is that the founder can be a trustee, that's okay, but as a rule of thumb, there needs to be at least another two trustees, and they should have equal votes. So the founder can never control the trustees' decisions, which brings us to the element of trust, pardon the pun, because if you relinquish control as a founder of your trust, that means you can be outvoted by your co-trustees, which means unless you appoint a puppet, and again, the law will not uphold a puppet trustee appointment, it means that you need to choose very, very carefully as to who your co-trustees should be, people that you really, really trust, not as friends necessarily, but for their integrity and for their astuteness.
Makes sense. And I'm glad that you've educated us on this, right? And perhaps it's another conversation we can definitely visit in future, as for many South Africans, we know that trusts and even business trusts have often been deemed as a great way to store your wealth, create wealth, and transfer wealth, though there are some complications to it. But definitely a conversation we'll host in future. Francois, I'm keen to highlight and I guess emphasize again to our audience the importance of following through with these many institutions and the legalities behind them. Because what we witnessed last year during the height of the pandemic really was that many institutions had offered funding and forms of support, but what we saw was that minimal companies actually complied, and as a result, fewer companies actually benefited from the financial support that was offered. So as you mentioned, these are elements, the CIPC, SARS, Department of Labor, and even making sure that you registered adequately with other institutions is something that does need to be prioritized by entrepreneurs.
Fact. I totally agreed, and I think your example is an excellent one. It wasn't that big an exercise to comply, but the downside of non-compliance was enormous. Yep. I think you've illustrated the point extremely well. Guguletso, if I can make a suggestion, we've got to look now at compliance as, well, the main forms of compliance that most businesses in South Africa have to do, which is SARS and PUPIA. You've got to look at the different business vehicles. I think and you've hit the nail on the head when you started, when you said, look, it's very much, it depends on the type, well, you didn't say, I'm paraphrasing, but it depends very much on the type of business that you are in as to what your compliance obligations are. And I think that's quite important for our listeners as well. And nowadays, the internet is so user-friendly. Don't take it as legal advice, but go and Google, what license do I need if I want to? What registrations must I make if I want to? Because it is so industry-specific. If one is selling houses, then you are, per definition, an estate agent. And then you actually are subject to the Estate Agency Affairs Board.
Makes sense.
And there are certain exam searching was passed. You can't just go out there and sell houses. So that's just by way of example. But one's got to look at what the core of your business is and then see whether you're subject to a particular regulator. If we take another example, if one lends money, micro-lending, and charges any sort of interest on it, you are, per definition, immediately a credit provider under the National Credit Act. And if you do not register with the National Credit Regulator, your agreements are potentially void. You can lose all the money that you've lent out. And that has actually happened to a good number of people. And again, it's not a massive thing to comply. Mm-hmm. Register, it's once off, and then it's done. The chances that anything further will be required of you are minimal.
Makes sense. But we do need to comply. You're quite right. Making sure that we comply, we make an effort, and we do our research, as you said, Francois. A lot of the information is out there. And we also need to, I guess, do our research in terms of speaking to individuals who are also in the same field, because they would have first-hand examples as to how
Absolutely.
You go about having practical and, I guess, a more efficient and seamless experience in terms of compliance. Francois, thank you so much for your time this evening. Always a pleasure engaging with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You're absolutely right. The sentiment is entirely mutual. Always enjoy chatting with you.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Francois. Really appreciate your time this evening. That's our guest tonight on All Things Legally Speaking, Francois Terblanche. That's the director at Terblanche Khumalo Commercial Law Specialist, helping understand and unpack the issue of compliance. Right? Many of us struggle with it. We feel frustrated by it. But whether you're interacting with the CIPC, with SARS, even the Department of Labor, or many other institutions from a legal point of view, you do need to make sure that you do comply. As Francois mentioned, it might not impact the value of your business, but it can detract from it because in business will just be more difficult for you to operate in when certain paperwork is required from you in future.
Legally speaking on Kaya Biz.
Kaya Biz with Guguletu Mfupi.
Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.